So much so that they referenced it, or they made comments toward the Book of Enoch, in which, for the most part, many people have never even read a single verse in the Book of Enoch as something that would be helpful from the biblical sense. How many know that God wants to, He wants to inform us of these principles that help us and encourage us and minister to our lives? So we're going to go, you may or may not be able to go to the Book of Enoch. Like I said to you last Shabbat, you could research Enoch 1, and it'll bring up a interactive website where you can actually select the chapter you want. And so we're going to be going to the 32nd chapter of Enoch, looking at a text there that's referencing the trees that were in the garden. Now, last Shabbat, we talked about mainly the tree of life. It was the thing that we focused on, the tree of life. What I'd like to do tonight is I want to focus on the tree of knowledge of good and evil, as the 32nd chapter starts to refer us to, and we'll be able to pull, I think, some important gems from that that'll help us along the way. So Enoch chapter 32, starting with verse 1, and after these fragrant odors, I mean, notice that there's similarities between two trees, and the thing that's similar is the fragrance, the fragrant odor. So there's a big emphasis drawn on the smell of the trees. Why is smell important? Why is smell important when you go to a bakery? What does it make you want to do? Makes you buy, right? It smells so good, and you may not even be intending on buying that product, but smell actually works toward you wanting or desiring that. And so if you smell a food that has a odor to it that you don't care for, you don't even want to taste it. But if you smell something that has that smell that you want, you want to taste it. So we know smell was important, and for the most part, we don't find that a thing in our Bible. Yet Shaul knew about the fragrance. He even said we should have the fragrance of Messiah. I want to ask you a question. What is the fragrance of Messiah? We should have it. What is it? You understand? So if we don't understand that this smell is important, we spend no time in Enoch whatsoever looking at this. And so I think we leave a lot on the table, and we don't want to do that. It says, as I looked toward the north over the mountain, I saw seven mountains full of choice nard and fragrant trees and cinnamon and pepper. And thence I went over the summit of all these mountains far toward the east of the earth and passed above the Euterean Sea, and went far from it, and passed over the angel Zotiel, and I came to the Garden of Righteousness. What is the Garden of Eden called here? The Garden of Righteousness. That's another name for it. And I and from afar off trees, more numerous than I, these trees and the great two trees there. What great two trees he's talking about? These great trees that he's seeing this stuff. They're there, very great, beautiful and glorious and magnificent. The tree of knowledge, whose holy fruit they ate, and no great wisdom. So he's talking about the tree of knowledge of good and evil. They ate his holy fruit, and they know great wisdom. That tree is in height like the fir. Its leaves are like those of the carob tree, and its fruit is like the cluster of the vine, very beautiful. I mean, see that? The cluster of the vine, very beautiful. And the fragrance of the tree penetrates afar. Again, that's this emphasis on the fragrance of the tree. Why? Because, let me just tell you, sin is appealing. It has a drawing factor. It has an ability to turn the head. And when the head turns, there's nothing good happens after that. And so it's important that we take in consideration these statements. It said, I said, how beautiful is the tree and how attractive is its look. How beautiful is the tree and how attractive is its look. So this was the reason behind using two different type of trees, because this tree is attractive. Its look is attractive. And depending on your appetite, you probably pick this tree because it's prettier. It's got some color to it, and it looks good. And he's saying, this is how sin is. It's attractive. So to say it's not attractive is lying to ourselves. Sin is appealing and it's attractive. And sometimes sin makes you want it. Makes you want it, you desire it. But what helps us strengthen us is we have to have a stronger desire for the tree of life. So we have to get familiar with the tree of life. We have to spend more time understanding the tree of life. So the more you understand Yeshua and what Yeshua is all about, this will be less attractive. But if you don't know about Yeshua, this is going to be very attractive. And you'll get a lot of trouble. And so he said this, and it is like the cluster of the vine, very beautiful, and the fragrance of the tree penetrates afar. And I said, how beautiful is the tree and how attractive is its look. So when I was thinking about this statement in Enoch, it reminded me about Hasatan and how attractive he was. Let's go read it in Ezekiel 28. And this is the title, A Lament Over the King of Tyre. In Ezekiel 28, verse 11. And the word of Yehovah came to me, saying, Son of man, take up a lamentation for the sovereign of Zeor, and you shall say to him, Thus said the Master Yehovah, you were sealed up, a pattern complete in wisdom and perfect in loveliness. Notice the language here versus the language of Enoch versus this tree here of knowledge of good and evil. This is not going to be an ugly tree. This is not going to be a tree that you disdain, you have a distaste for. This is a very appealing thing. And this is what you're up against. You're up against two opposing factors, and they both have equal appetite within the human race. And depending on your allegiance or where you assign your worship, you're going to be entertained by one of these trees. And it's up to us to assign our worship to the tree of life. Amen?
Right.
Because it all boils down to a choice. But if you're not careful, it's so appealing, it'll cause your choice to lean heavy toward the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And now watch what it says. It says, You were sealing up a pattern complete in wisdom and perfect in loveliness. You were in Eden. How many see this? You were in Eden, the garden of Elohim. Every precious stone was your covering. The ruby, the topaz, the diamond, the beryl, the shoham, the jasper, the sapphire, the turquoise, the emerald and gold. The workmanship of your settings and mounting was prepared for you on the day you were created. So when we're talking about Hasatan, we're talking about spectacular. We're talking about beautiful. We're talking about radiant. Now, you notice I gave this list of stones. Where else do we find this list of stones being applied to someone? And who is it applied to? The high priest. So this position that Hasatan had, this was no slouch position. This was, of all created beings that God ever made, there's none more spectacular and more beautiful and more prestige than Hasatan? None. None whatsoever. Do you understand that? And so he wants us to get this picture that his top, top creation got an appetite to lift himself up. He developed a pride, was developed inside of him. And so to think that we can't develop pride would really be silly on our part to even think that can't happen. And so notice that you were the anointed cherub that covered. The anointed cherub that covered. And I placed you, and you were at the set-apart mountain of Elohim. You walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire. This walking up and down in the midst of the stones of fire, to even have the ability to do that, you had to be a spectacular creation. He walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire without it hurting him. Because that glory that emanated from the Most High was reflected off of this creation. Now, he didn't obtain the glory, but it reflected off of him. He had all these beautiful elements of him that would reflect the glory of God, and it was not harming him. He was still able to function and be in that presence. You were perfect in your way from the day you were created until unrighteousness was found in you. Now, how can you go from that state to unrighteousness? Because this is a quick transition from that state of perfect creation to all of a sudden unrighteous. Unrighteousness is found in you. By the greatness of your trade, you became filled with violence within, and you sinned. And so we see that this, he says, by the greatness of your trade, you became filled with violence within, and you sinned. And so the issue is that Hasatan here started not using his creative being to send his worship to the Most High, but to worship himself. So he spent more time thinking about his beauty, thinking about what he didn't have, thinking about what God had, and how God wasn't fair. And all of a sudden, because he spent a lot of time doing that, leaning toward that, then his sin was found in him. So he developed something that was not even in existence. He developed it by the way he started to act. And so he developed this sin. It's found in him. And so this sin that's found in him is what... How can he have sin if there's no Torah? Right? How could that be sin? Because God is the Torah. You understand? And in God, God has a set of rules. Satan, by his design, was designed for a certain thing. And he went contrary to that certain thing. Therefore, he broke the rule of God. Because he tried to live outside of the creation that he was created to be. And that was to be the Kavurim cherub, to not covet God's position. Yet he found himself doing that. He coveted God's position. And so we see that this tree have to stand together, or we don't have a society of sane people that can choose and make their mind up who they're going to serve. We have a bunch of robots who've been told and dictated what they're going to do in life. And so at the end of the day, that spells a God that's unfair to allow people to make a choice for themselves. And so God is not going to lord it over us. He wants to be Lord in our life, but we have to select him. We have to choose him. It's just like a couple. They get together. They choose each other. They're not forced to be together. They chose each other. And because of that, you chose each other. You have to it might get difficulty, but you got to find the harmony. It might get hard. You got to make it work. You got to get there and pray. You got to get there and really work hard at it because you chose each other. And so we got to quit making it easy for the unchoosing when you chose each other. We have to say, you know what? You got to work hard at it. Well, it's not working. You got to work harder. You got to find what you need to give up. Whatever it is you got to do, you find that spot so you can see that harmony And what God, and so we didn't see that here. And what happened was there was this disruption in the heavens. Your heart was lifted up because of your loveliness. You corrupted your wisdom for the sake of your splendor. I threw you to the earth and laid you before sovereigns to look at. You profaned your set apart place by your many crookednesses, by the unrighteousness of your trade. Therefore, I brought fire from your midst and has devoured you, and I turned you to ash upon the earth before the eyes of all who see you. All who knew you among the peoples were astonished at you. Waste you shall be and cease to be forever. So that's the end game. God already knows. And Hasatan knows that his time is, he's living on borrowed time, and his time is short. And so he's going to try to manipulate by his beauty and by his fragrance and by his appeal as many as possible. That's why this is a very competitive realm that we're in. It's not easy to commit to the tree of life and go to church and be faithful to the commands of God. That's not an easy thing. But you chose to do that rather than choosing to go with Hasatan. This is easy to do. It's very easy to go with Hasatan. Because he's going to say, live it up, it's okay. Don't worry about a thing. You know, you can have $1,000 in your pocket on a Friday night and say, spend it all, we're going to make more money tomorrow, it's going to be okay. Little do you know, you go to crank the motor on the boat and it's broke. And you're $1,000 up because you parted it up. And he's not going to show up to rescue you. He's going to laugh at you. Because you believed the lie and you got manipulated. And that's what this tree represents. It's a mixture. And he's trying to keep us from that. He's trying to say he's got the best of the bad and the best of the good all in one. You can have the best of both worlds. You don't have to worry about a thing. You can go to church and just say, I love Jesus. And then you can go party on the week. It doesn't matter. You have the best of both worlds. That's exactly what Hasatan sells, and many people buy that because it fits exactly what their desire is.
That's right.
So we see that, we know that he was the cover and cherub. Psalms 80 verse 1, give ear, O shepherds of Israel, who lead yourself like a flock, who dwell between the cherubs, shine forth. So we know that Yehovah dwells between the cherubs, and so we know that this position that Hasatan had was the highest position can be given to any created being. There he is. He's at the top, but he desired more. He desired God's spot. We don't desire God's spot. We desire to be with God, but not to take his spot. That type of attitude only comes from this side of the mist. The middle of the garden, it comes from this side. It's produced there, and it's exactly what people do. You know, that's why money is the root of all evil. They start making money, and before in Hasatan says, yeah, we're going to make all the money. You don't have to worry about going to do that. Only the silly people go put tents up, and they cook around campfires, and they live out in, like in the wilderness. The only silly people do that. You don't have to do that. We're somebody. We can't lower our standards and go do something like that. Look at us. Look at where we're going. Look at what we're going to be. That's the thing that Hasatan constantly sells. So let's go now to the rest of 32. Look at verse 6 of 32 of Enoch. Then Raphael, the holy angel who was with me, answered me and said, this is the tree of wisdom of which thy father, old in years, Adam, and thy aged mother, Eve, were before thee, have eaten and learnt wisdom, and their eyes opened, and they knew that they were naked, and they were driven out of the garden. So how do we know that chapter 32 speaking of this tree of knowledge of good and evil? Because it tells us. It tells us the aged father and the aged mother. Who's the aged father and aged mother that he's talking about? It's Adam and Eve. And he tells us they ate and they learned wisdom. So it's not a lie that you're going to learn wisdom. It's the tree of knowledge of good. You're going to learn some good from it. But you don't get the good without the evil, because it's a mixed tree. You can't say, I'm just going to eat the good and I'm not going to eat the bad. It's a mixed tree. And so you can't have one without the other. And so what we see happening there is that Enoch is basically telling us in the story of the 32nd chapter what tree we're dealing with. That's why we're able to teach it separately, not just talking about two trees in a garden, real superficial and brief. We can separate the two and talk about one, each independent tree, because they're spoken of it in an independent way, and it gives us some understanding. So go to Genesis 3 now. Genesis chapter 3, verse 1. And the Nahash was more crafty than all the lives of the fields which Jehovah Elohim had made. And he said to the woman, "Is it true that Elohim has said, do not eat of every tree of the garden?" Now here comes Hasatan with an intention. The intention was, it's to strip the fear of God out of Eve. What she knew about God. Did she know anything about God? That's number one. Did she know anything? Absolutely, she knew something about God. Was she ever involved in those encounters where God would come and speak with him in the cool of the day? Absolutely, she was involved. But Satan's job, notice, this is not a two-way conversation until he gets out what his intent is. Read it again. And the Nahash was more crafty than any lives of the field which Jehovah Elohim had made, and he said to the woman, "Is it true that Elohim has said, do not eat of every tree of the garden?" Again, his intent is to strip the fear or create a doubt in the mind of Eve about what God says. And so this Nahash, in your footnote, it says traditionally it's rendered as serpent, but you see the explanatory notes of serpent and Nahash, and I encourage you to go look at the explanatory notes. You'll see some in the back of your Bible, but not only there, if you go online, you'll get a much in-depth, more deeper understanding, and you'll find out that this Nahash, which I dealt with this already last week, I won't spend a ton of time on, this Nahash was not just a beast of the field. Many times that's what, you know, we look at, that's what the King James interpreted, lives. But again, that word lives is talking about beings. So it's beast of the field, and what we learn is that this Nahash is not someone that's just ordinary. There's a scheme behind this, and we're being set right for in the translation. This is the beast, or the mark of the beast, is initial appearance right here in this verse. Because people talk about the mark of the beast and they think it's an end time thing. The mark of the beast has been around as long as these two trees have been around. This is the mark of life. This is the mark of the beast. Let me understand that. So we want it to be some secret thing. We want it to be some chip. We want it to be some scan your wrist thing. And, you know, just put it hide under your skin. We want it to be something sci-fi type thing. That's what we want it to be. Because we can always say we're not there. We've been there. Ever since this was put there, we've been there. And this has been a competition between the good and the evil. And the evil is winning. Right. You understand that? It's winning because more people choose the appeal of history than they do of history. Because they don't know a lot about history. Our job is to teach as much as we possibly can about this tree. But in order to be fair to this tree, we have to see what the competition is. You know, if you're going to win the game, you got to know your competition. You got to study your competition. You got to learn it. When I was in high school, when we was going to compete with a team that we wasn't sure about, we'd watch reels. They'd have reels. They'd bring us into the TV room, and they'd play the game that they played previously before. What did they do? What some of the plays they were? And we'd watch it over and over and over again. You always have a day that you watch games that they previously played. Why? Because if you don't know your opponent, you won't truly come to realize the power and authority that you possess. You have to know your opponent. And so what we see happening is this competition that's happening here is happening because God, what we see happen is the Nahash is not some figure that we don't have to pay attention to. Right. Now, we interpret it in English, serpent. That's very superficial and shallow because the only reason we get serpent is because of the sound, the hiss. And so this is how Satan works. He says, it's okay. Come closer. It's okay. Go ahead and touch me. I won't bite. Just touch me. It's okay. It'll be all right. You know, just do it one time. Nobody's watching. Nobody's going to care. You know, it's not a Shabbat day. Just go do something. It's okay. It's okay to just have one drink with your friends. It's okay. It'll be all right. It's real soft. It's real subtle. It's just to make you think. And what is it to do? To remove the fear of Elohim from you. To strip it away. The moment you quit fearing God, you're gonna take that tree. Don't kid yourself. You're going to take that tree the moment you quit fearing God. So we have to be careful not to do that. But we know that this Nahash is a shining one. It's one that shines. It's one that's it's a luminary. And we've seen that even in his creation. This was, if you looked at this creative, this cherubim, if you looked at Hasatan, he would have been a standout above everybody else. He would have stood out. Because God wasn't going to have somebody less be one that represents the cover. So he put the top one. That was Hasatan. And because he got that position, he couldn't go no higher than he was except to take the position of God. And that's what he desired. Just like the enemy. He don't have enough with your life. He wants to destroy you. He wants to overtake you and completely destroy you. He comes but to kill, steal, and destroy. The word destroy, if you study it out in the Greek, it means to grind up like powder and blow it away. Like you never existed. That's the job of Hasatan, to make it be where you never existed. So, but you know, the complete difference is, he said, I come that you might have life and have life more abundantly. I want you to live, and I want you to live. I want you to live the abundant life. And that word life there is Zoe, the God life. I want you to live the God life, the God design life. And that's something that is completely opposite. They oppose each other, and they're opposite. Verse 2, and the woman said to the Nahash, we are to eat of the fruit of the tree of the garden, but of the fruit of the trees which is in the midst of the garden, Elohim has said, do not eat of it, nor touch it, lest you die. Now, so this was completely forbidden for them to eat from it or touch it. Completely forbidden. And then Nahash said to the woman, you shall not certainly die. There's that, again, scheming. You won't certainly die. You won't really die. Now, when he says certainly die there, he says it, in Hebrew, it's twice there again. It's moot. You won't certainly die. You won't be checkmate. But God said you would. So I want you to go to Romans 8 with me just for a little while. We'll come back to this in a minute. Romans 8, 12. It says, so then, brothers, we are not debtors to the flesh to live according to the flesh. Let me see that. We're not debtors to the flesh. If you're living according to the flesh, it's not because you're a debtor to the flesh. It's by choice. Remember, you're not accidentally doing it. You don't accidentally fall into it. If you're living according to the flesh, you chose to live according to the flesh because you're not a debtor to the flesh. We're not debtors to the flesh to live according to the flesh. For if you live according to the flesh, you are going to die. If you live according to the flesh, you're going to die. But if by the Spirit you put to death the deeds of the body, you shall live. For as many as are led by the Spirit of Elohim, these are the sons of Elohim. For you did not receive the spirit of bondage again to fear, but you received the spirit of adoption by whom we cry, Abba, Father. So he's showing us the difference. There's a clear difference between living after the flesh and living after the Spirit. And he's saying, because he's not talking about just having a father. He's talking about Abba, Father. He's your father. You can't get closer to the Father if you live according to the Spirit. For he said, the Spirit himself bears witness with our spirit that we are the children of Elohim. And that's what you have to have. There's nothing more confident than when you have God's Spirit bears witness with your spirit. It's like you should have a witness in your spirit that you should be here tonight. That it's something you needed to do. Not because everybody else is doing it, but it's something you needed to do. Because, again, during Sukkot, really what needs to happen now, I noticed that some of you, if I go to your tent, right in front of your tent, you've been spreading out your you know, blankets in front. So independently, that's what every one of us should have done. We spread out, and we're coming from, we're gonna come inside the sukkah with God. And we're saying that now my spirit bears witness with his spirit. Now we have a kindred spirit that's working. And when that happens, no matter what you do, whether you're cooking, cleaning, picking tables up, putting tents out, you enjoy it, every bit of it. Whether you're cutting grass, cleaning church, it doesn't matter. You enjoy it because you have a kindred spirit, because you spread your blanket, now you're sukkah with him, and you come from outside of the normalcy of life to inside to a simple life. Because it's back to simpleness. And you remember in your wilderness journey, this is what Sukkot is all about. You remember when God was with you, and you walked through the wilderness, and your feet didn't swell, and your sandals didn't wear out, and he provided everything you had need of, he provided. Understand that they didn't have a place to go plant a garden when they were in the wilderness. There was no wells. They had to come up on a place, and God had to provide water for them. He had to provide manna for them. He was taking care of them the whole time. This is what Sukkot is about. It's about you relaxing and letting God tend to your every need spiritually. And so we know that there's a lot of stuff going on because we're not used to it. If we've been doing this for the last 40 years, it'd be a piece of cake. We wouldn't even think about it. But we hadn't done this for 40 years. This is our first year doing it like this. So it's going to be a lot at first. And this is where sometimes it makes and breaks people. You know, because I'm not cut out for that. I'm not doing that again. That was hard. But you have to understand, you're trying to find a kindred connection. Your spirit with his spirit. And so when that happens, you have the ability, no matter how difficult it is, to relax in it. And that's what I hope's happening for you in this today. And when you eat from the tree of life, it's relaxing. When you're over here listening to this, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if you're going to live one day or die the next day. You have no idea. And so we have to be careful that we don't put ourselves in that position. The Spirit himself bears witness with our spirit that we're the children of Elohim. And if children, also heir, truly heir of Elohim and co-heir with Messiah, if indeed we suffer with him in order that we be exalted together. Right. So is there going to be some discomfort? Absolutely.
Right.
Is there going to be some suffering? Sure, but we're required to do these things. If we don't suffer with him, then how can we expect to have the benefit that he received?
Right.
So we see, you know, if we just read part of 17, then you can complain. But if you read all of 17, if indeed we suffer with him, in order that we also be exalted together. So it's going to be a discomfort. And he's not putting us through discomfort to overpressure us. He's showing it's necessary. It's what gets us to think about how amazing God is. Sometimes we forget how, you know, we always want more, 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 but we forget how nice it is, you know, to be in a travel trailer versus the tent. How nice it is to be in an air-conditioned house rather than in a tent. You realize now, man, I had it good, but I found myself starting to complain about what I didn't have when I was there. But now I'm realizing, man, I had a lot. It's nice when you can get up and you hit the faucet and hot water comes out. It's nice when, you know, you can go to your stove and you got pots and pans and you just do the thing and you got fire. You don't have to cut wood. You don't have to put the wood on the fire ahead of time. And so you start to realize it's different. You got to think more doing this, more ahead. If not, you get in trouble, right? So I want you to understand that this is what he's telling us here. Now, the lie that Hasatan says, the lie is the law is done away with. You don't need it. That's the lie. That's the lie. So he tells Eve first a lie, and then he covers the lie with a what? A truth. So you tell a lie and you just cover it with a truth. And if somebody's not diligent to pull the lie away, you're never going to see. If you don't investigate the truth, you never see the lie.
Right.
If If you don't dig into the truth, you never see the lie. And so the lie is the law is done away with. You don't need it. And he said, Nahash said to the woman, you shall certainly not die. That's a lie. I remember the first time I preached this, I said, if you don't think it's a lie, what are we doing here? We had a funeral. I said, if this is not a lie, then what are we doing here? Why is this person dead? Because it's a lie when Satan says you won't die.
That's right.
You're going to die. Now here's how he covers it up with the truth. Because Messiah died for us, we're under grace. The law is done away with. We don't need it because Messiah died for us and under grace. See, he takes the lie and he covers it with the truth. And so the truth that he gave to Eve was, for Elohim knows that in the day you eat of it, your eyes shall be opened and you shall be like Elohim, knowing good and evil. That's the truth. So Satan's telling the truth there, but he told a lie first, and he covered it with the truth. And so the way he sold it to the church world today is, you don't need the law, the Torah, because Messiah died, we're under grace. So he tells the truth, Messiah did die, and we're under grace. But to say you don't need the Torah, the instructions of the Most High, is absolutely crazy.
Right.
And how there's not, listen, it's not 10, it's not 100, it's millions and millions of people, over a billion people in one organized religion believe that nonsense.
Right.
Billions of people around the world believe that you don't need to be under the Torah, that you don't have to have Sukkot, you don't have to do none of these things.
Right.
So Ephesians chapter 2, you go there with me. Ephesians chapter 2 says, for by favor you have been saved through belief, and that not of yourself, it is the gift of Elohim. So that is the truth. For by favor we've been saved through belief. It's not of yourself, it's the gift of Elohim. So Hathatan again, he has the ability to lie. He has the ability to tell the truth. This tree has the same fragrance as this tree. It has that ability. That tree's appealing, this tree's appealing. That tree has good fruit, this tree has good fruit. So you're not going to just look at these trees and say, well, one's better than the other. It's going to take more than just looking at them. You have to inundate yourself with what they represent as standalone trees. And so when we look at the Etzheim and we unfold the trunk of the Etzheim, what happens? We start to see that God gives this list of instructions. We start to unfold this tree and we find out it's loaded down with lies first. And he covers it up with the truth. And so then all of a sudden you realize that this tree, although if you look at it, it draws you in. But know that it's just Hasatan's way of manipulating and taking advantage of people that don't know the truth.
Right.
So let's go to, we'll read one verse in Corinthians. 1 Corinthians 14, verse 20 says, brothers, do not be children in your thinking, but in evil be babes, and in your thinking be perfect. So what do we have to do? We got to get our thinking right, right? So he says, brethren, do not be children in your thinking, but in evil be babes. So when it comes to this tree, be a person that's a babe, not so learned, but when it comes to this, be perfect. So take some time to inundate yourself and study in that. And verse 6, back to Genesis. And the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was pleasant to the eye, and a tree desirable to make one wise. And she took of its fruit and ate, and she gave also to her husband with her, and he ate. Now I want to explain to you, when Eve ate, it says nothing about her eyes being open.
Right.
Nothing at all. As far as she knew, there was no change whatsoever. So she eats the tree, she said, I didn't die.
Right.
She didn't say, she didn't feel like she was naked or anything. Because again, it all depended on her husband. And then it goes on in the next verse, it says, then, let me see that. Then, after Adam ate, then the eyes of both of them were opened. After he ate, then the eyes of both of them were opened. Why wasn't Eve's eye open when she ate? Because it was contingent upon her husband in order for Hasatan to win. He had to beat Adam, not Eve. He used Eve to get to Adam. You understand? Why? Because we had two opposing factors battling against each other. Hasatan, what's his game? What was his end game? I got to be better than Adam. And he ain't all that. But he couldn't get to him unless he went through the wife. What happened when, let me come out here and talk to you about some history of our lesson. What happened when Balaam was, and Balak? Balak asked Balaam to curse Israel. He said, I can't curse Israel. You're telling me to curse Israel, I can't curse it, but I tell you what you do.
Right.
You work through the women, you can get the men.
Right.
So what did they do? They brought the beautiful women in and had these men get a strong appetite for these women, and all of a sudden he took them all down.
Right.
Why? Because it's the way the enemy works. The enemy's going to work. And so I want the ladies just to think about this, because in a couple lessons here, we're going to be talking about the extension of this, and it's going to be directed more toward the women and what God has for you. It's powerful what God has for you in these next few days. But you have to be open to it. Don't be used by the enemy to get your husband. And it's exactly what the enemy wants to do. But we're gonna be on top of it. We're going to give enough information to you that you'll be way stronger than allowing that to happen. But Satan knew, if I go fight Adam, I lose every day, all day long. 7 days a week, he loses against Adam, one-on-one. He knows that. So what he did, he went to his wife, and threw the wife, because she ate, nothing happened. She must have said, I'm not looking at nothing happened. And he's looking at his wife, still clothed, and the glory is still beautiful. Nothing happened, so naturally he takes them. Listen, his allegiance wasn't to his wife, his allegiance was to God.
That's right.
And what happened was, because he broke that covenant, it filtered down through his wife, and it brought a curse on his wife and him. The Bible says because of one man sin entered the world after that death.
Right.
One man. And so Satan knew, and it's the same tactic he uses today. He separates the home, and then he brings destruction to it. If he can separate the home, he weakens the entire framework.
Right.
And so we don't want to ever let him weaken the home. Amen?
Right, man.
So so every man in here who has a strong wife that loves God, you ought to cherish that every day of your life.
Yeah.
And you ought to spend your entire, all your energy making sure you protect that. Because
yeah.
It's your job to do that.
Yeah.
And so the both of them were open, and they knew that they were naked, and they sewed fig leaves together and made loin covers for themselves. And I covered some of this during Yom Kippur. And they heard the voice. Let me see that. They heard the voice. This voice is, again, represents the word. They hear the Mimra, they heard the Mimra coming, the voice of God. And when God comes with his voice, he comes with his instruction. God doesn't have empty words. There's no empty word in God.
Right.
You know, people can say a lot of stuff and they don't say nothing. It's like empty words. Now, you'll never find that with God. When God speaks, it matters.
Right.
And so when he shares, it's something about what he does. And so he speaks this. And so it says, and he heard the voice of Yehovah Elohim walking about in the garden in the cool of the day. And Adam and his wife hid themselves from the presence of Yehovah amongst the trees of the garden. And Yehovah Elohim called unto Adam and said to him, where are you? And he said, I heard your voice in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked. Now, was he naked? Or was what he knew what he did, was it sufficient enough to cover his nakedness? He wasn't naked. Why is he saying this? He covered himself with fig leaves. He was not naked. But he said, I knew I was naked, because what I tried to do to fix myself was still not sufficient enough to fix myself.
Right.
And so I spent all that time sewing fig leaves together to make glowing covers, yet I'm still naked. You can spend your entire life trying to fix yourself and still wind up naked. And so the only help we hope we have is we have to receive what our Father gave to us, and that's His only Son to come and cover our sins. And so that when He covers us, we're well covered. So we see that happening here in this particular passage. They said they were covered, yet they still felt naked, because what they did was not sufficient enough. And He said, "Who made you know that you were naked? Have you eaten of the tree of which I commanded you that you should not eat?" So He emphasizes the word "commanded you." I commanded you. Have you eaten of that tree? Because the only way you know you're naked, you had to eat of the tree that I commanded you not to eat. So He knew what happened. And the man said, "The woman whom you gave to be with me, she gave me of the tree and I ate." Now that's what you call low down, passing the buck. And I'm telling you, God treated it exactly with that statement I gave. That's low down and passing the buck. Not only did he blame his wife, he blamed God. So God gave something that was not, didn't have the ability to stay away from this tree. So God, if you wouldn't have gave me that one in particular, I wouldn't be naked. I wouldn't be hiding behind these fig leaves right now. And so that's generally what happens when you eat from this tree and you get caught. You blame people for a long time. You blame. And then hopefully by the grace of God, the gospel is preached and you come to your senses and you quit blaming everybody else for your choices in life. You chose to get up and do those things and you make right decisions. But you're not getting away from it, because every time you eat from this tree, you always blame somebody else for what you did. It just feels right. It feels better if it's somebody else's fault. Because I wouldn't really be doing this. I wouldn't be drinking. I wouldn't be doing drugs if it wouldn't be for this one that hurt me, this one that did this, my family just divorced, and it's the list of excuses go on forever and ever. And, you know, we can call some of these things legitimate excuses, but to God, the legitimacy of an excuse doesn't matter to God when He offers the tree of life. He offers you a way out. So we have to take that in consideration. The man said, "The woman whom you gave to be with me, she gave me to eat of the tree, and I ate." And Jehovah Elohim said to the woman, "What is this you have done?" And the woman said, "The Nahash deceived me, and I ate." Verse 14, and Jehovah Elohim said to the Nahash. Immediately, once she said that, where he focused on? Jehovah focused on Nahash. "Because you have done this, you are cursed more than all livestock and more than every beast of the field." This is that beast mark already in Genesis. This beast mark is there. It's being set for us. So the mark of the beast has been around since the third chapter of Genesis. It's been around. It has been in every generation since then. It's not went anywhere. And it's been presented in this tree. This appealing, this fragrance, this drawing in. What's all the commercials about? When they're trying to sell songs, when they're trying to sell clothes, when they're trying to sell cologne, when they're trying to sell food, it's all the appeals to get the eyes, get the head to turn. I gotta get the head to turn. So if they can get your head to turn to the ad, your chances of buying is gonna be higher. So that now they have, you know, these little mini ads that run on Google and Facebook and TikTok and YouTube. These little mini ads, they call them shorts, and they just, some of them are just ads, you know, they're advertising something. And if they can get you to turn your head and click a button, it's a higher rate that you'll buy that product. So they get people to do these little mini advertisements. And it's just the way things sell. It's to always turn the head. They turn the head. And the sad thing is they turn the head with risque dressed women or men. And it's appealing. It's what sells. And so what it is, if we can get them unclothed, it'll turn the head. What turned David's head when Bathsheba was unclothed? Turned his head. And that's what sells today. So they do it in all the commercials, during the football games, during the halftime shows. You go, 90% of the commercials are risque when it comes to the sex appeal with selling, because that's what works. It's He's trying to turn it. That's how Hasatan works. He's still operating under the same modus, the same way he worked then, he's still working now. He never changed. He's still doing it today. And so we have to be aware of that. So you might be focused here and you might be dedicated to this, but this never stops. It's constantly flashing. And when you're focused here, it starts strobe lighting and color. Then it adds color. Then it adds fireworks. And before you know it, you look over there, and there it is. You know, that's how many have seen that? That's the appeal of the enemy. That's what he does constantly. And so you could be watching one of your favorite shows that you like, and a commercial comes across, and it's always to try to get you to turn the head and go the opposite of what God wants. And so we have to understand that's what we're up against, and we have to stay true to the things of God. And Elohim, Yehovah Elohim said to Nahash, because you have done this, you are cursed more than all livestock and more than every beast of the field. On your belly you are to go and eat dust all the days of your life. And I will put enmity between you and between the woman, between your seed and her seed, and he shall crush your head and you shall crush his heel. And to the woman he said, I greatly increase your sorrow and your conception, bringing forth children in pain, and your desire is for your husband, and he does rule over you. And we've had all of these before. I'm not going to spend a lot of time dealing with that. You've heard the classes on what exactly that means. And to the man he said, because you have listened to the voice of your wife, and have eaten of the tree which I commanded you, saying, do not eat of it, curses the ground because of you, and toil you are to eat all the days of your life. And the ground shall bring forth thorns and thistles for you, and you shall eat the plant of the field, and by the sweat of your face you are to eat bread until you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken, for dust you are, to dust you return. And the man called his wife Hawa, because she became the mother of all living. And Yehovah Elohim made coats of skin for the man and his wife, and dressed them. And Yehovah Elohim said, see, the man has become like one of us. That's because Hasatan was telling the truth. That was the truth. You'll be like God, knowing good and evil. So he's become like one. Who's verifying it was true? Yehovah is. He said a truth. He lied first and covered it with a truth. That's what he does. He first lied. He lies to you, tell you, you won't die. And he says, go ahead and do what you want to do. And before you know it, you'll have a good time. And it is a good time. You're going out. You're going out with your friends. Everybody's having a good time. You know, you're playing music. You're drinking. It's a good time. He's telling the truth. But the downside of that is the horrors that come with eating from that tree. And so we have to be careful. And Yehovah Elohim says, see, the man has become like one of us, knowing good and evil. And now at least he put forth his hand and take also of the tree of life and eat and live forever. So Yehovah Elohim sent him out of the garden of Eden to till the ground from which he was taken. And he drove the man out, and he placed the cherubim at the east of the garden of Eden, a flaming sword that turns every way to guard the way of the tree of life. Now, what we have happened is we've been put out of the garden. So we are not in the garden. We never were in the garden, us. But he sent the tree of life to us to guide us back to the garden. Ultimately, the garden will be back in place, and we'll walk in that garden together. So he sent, that's why Yeshua said, follow me. Where is he leading us to? Where is he bringing us? To follow somebody means they're bringing you somewhere. Where is he bringing us? He's bringing us back to that place. So he sent his son into the world, and he sukkahed with us. He tabernacled among us. And so we come to celebrate during Sukkot to recognize that we are saying that our Savior, our Messiah, came, was sent by God. He sukkahed with us. And so we take pleasure every year to sukkah back with him, letting him know that we appreciate him. And we love taking part in Sukkot because he came and felt he tabernacled with us. So the Feast of Tabernacles is us recognizing that we recognize that, and we want to please him, we want to honor him, and we want to stay focused on this, not glancing over here, because this is still appealing. And, you know, look at you, it's just a few of you. Your eyeballs, you're pretty much, you borderline lost your mind. You're a little crazy doing that stuff. Who does that stuff. We don't do that stuff. We have big gatherings. We get together, it's lights and smoke, and it's just bands, and it's wonderful. It's appealing. But the end of it is death. And so keep that in mind. Amen? So we know that man's driven out, so we're in a driven out state. Now we're closer because we're now recognizing and we're following our Messiah to back to the spot where it's going to be a wonderful place to be. And so thank God for that. Adam and Eve mixed the set apart with the profane. They mixed the set apart with the profane. And you can't do that. You can't mix the set apart with the profane. What they wanted was both trees. And how many people in the world today want both ways? They want it both ways. They want the church life and they want the world life all at the same time. So they'll muster up enough energy to go to church on a Sunday, sit and listen to a couple songs, hear a 25-minute sermon, and then go back and do their thing. And they're comfortable with that. And they say, yeah, you go to church? Yeah, I go to church. Are you saved? Yeah, I'm a Christian. How many people do you know of say that every time they say that? And they believe that with all their heart. But just because we believe something, just because a man can think, don't make it right. You can't mix the set apart with the profane. And so this represents a mixture. This is exactly what has got the world the way it is today. It's all mixed up. From the food industry to the pharmacy industry, all of those industries have mixed, it's all mixed. And it's exactly what they do. They take your food, they know it's good for you, but won't give it to you. And they'll put junk in it and force you to eat it. And then you got to spend extra money to try to find clean food yourself and break away from that table of what they say, that pyramid of eating. This is what you should eat. And you break away from that, and you start to find, whether you're in the health industry, the same thing. The health industry, they know that good and well what they can do to fix you. But if I can keep you coming to the office on a monthly basis, we make more money. And so we're not interested in you getting well. We're interested in managing your sickness. And we're going to keep managing it till you die. And God's here. He said he comes that we might be healed. And so healing is not like some miracle he wants to do. But healing is to give you information to help you change your habits and change your lifestyle. And so what you find in a lot of the Torah-keeping churches is you'll find more people have a tendency to be more health conscious in that group than you have in any group out there. Because they know they've come to realize the truth rather than the lie. And so, and what we see in Deuteronomy chapter 30, I'm going to read this to you. I mentioned this before, I want to mention it again. Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 11. Well, this command, which I'm commanding you today, is not too hard for you, nor is it far off. It is not in heaven to say, who shall ascend into the heavens for us and bring it to us and cause us to hear it so that we do it? Nor is it beyond the sea to say, who shall go over the sea for us and bring it to us and cause us to hear it so that we do it? For the word is very near you, in your mouth and in your heart to do it. See, I have set before you today life and good, death and evil. What is that scripture pointing to? This picture right here.
Yes.
Pointing to this picture. In that I am commanding you today to love Yehovah Elohim, to walk in his ways, to guard his commands and his laws and his right rulings, and you shall live and increase, and Yehovah Elohim shall bless you in the land which you go to possess. But if your heart turns away and you do not obey, it shall be drawn away and shall bow down to other mighty ones and serve them. How many know that Eve had a choice? And what she chose is what she chose to worship. What she chose to worship was this tree. And whatever you choose to worship is going to be the very thing that you lean heavily toward. Whatever you direct your worship to is going to be what you choose. If you direct your worship to Yehovah, you're going to choose this tree. It's automatic. If you direct your worship to worldliness and living in the pleasantries of what Hasatan offers, you're going to worship this tree. You say, well, I'm not really. I just do this on the weekends. I'm not that bad. I'm not a bad person. You've directed your worship here. It's only a matter of time. It captivates you and sucks you down and destroys you ultimately. That's the enemy's job. He said, I declare to you today that you shall certainly perish. You shall not prolong your days in the land which you are passing over to Jordan to enter and possess. I have called heaven and earth as a witness today against you. I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, you shall choose life so that you live, both you and your seed, to love Yehovah your Elohim and obey his voice. Remember the condition. To choose life means you obey him. Means you love him and you obey his voice and cling to him, for he is your life and the length of days to dwell in the land which you Yehovah swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Yitzhak, and to Yaakov, to give them. And he drove them, the man out, and he placed cherubims at the east. I put that in there again at first. And so what we see, obedience equals worship. Obedience equals worship. So whatever you obey, that's what you're worshiping. And it can be either tree. You can have the same worship here, and you can have the same worship here. One is you're worshiping what God opposes. The other, you're worshiping what he invites you to worship. But you're directing your worship, your allegiance to it. You're not accidentally sinning. You're worshiping it. David didn't accidentally fall trap to what he saw in Bathsheba. He saw her nakedness. He didn't accidentally fall trap to that. He started to worship what he saw. He started to strongly desire what he saw. Because when he saw it, he didn't have it. She was over there and he was up there. But he started worshiping what he saw. He started thinking of, let it play in his mind. And he kept entertaining that thought. It's when you entertain the thought, you're directing your worship to it. So what do? When your thought comes to your mind, you say, I reject that thought. That thought has no place in my mind. I'm not entertaining that. Because the moment you do, you're directing your worship there. You have to say, I'm not doing that. So whatever that is that Hasatan uses against you, you immediately come against and say, I reject that type of thought. It has no place in my thinking. And don't direct your worship to it. So it's not the flash of the thought or the flash of the sight that you see. It's when you entertain it. And now you're directing worship there. You have to be adamant against that. And you have to walk in love. How many know that? Yes. And to love God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might, with all your strength, you're going to eat from this tree. So Ephesians chapter 5, verse 1. Find a spot to wrap it up here. It says, become then imitators of Elohim as beloved children. Verse 2. Walk in love, as Messiah also loved us and gave himself for us, a gift and an offering to Elohim for a sweet smelling what?
Fragrance.
He gives himself as a what? A sweet smelling fragrance. Now, who are we talking about if Yeshua is not synonymous with the tree of life? There's nobody else that's talked about it being a sweet smelling fragrance but Yeshua. And so he's the only one as a person that's synonymous with the tree of life wording that we see in the book of Enoch. And so it says he's a sweet smelling fragrance. But he says, this is what we got to stay against. But whoring and all uncleanness and greed and gain, let it not even be named among you as is proper among set apart ones. Neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather thanksgiving. For this you know, that no one who whores, nor unclean one, nor one greedy of gain, who is an idolater, has any inheritance in the reign of Messiah in Elohim. Let me see that. No inheritance. So to think that you can do those things and have an inheritance still, you believe the lie. There's no truth because the scripture doesn't support that. And so it says, let no one deceive you with empty words, for because of these, the wrath of Elohim comes upon the sons of disobedience. Remember, obedience equals worship. Disobedience, these are the things that they're disobedient to what? What God commanded. So when you're doing what God commanded, you're being obedient. When you're not, you're being disobedient. And he talks about the disobedient ones right here. And so we see that in Colossians chapter 3, verse 1. If then you were raised with Messiah, seek the matters which are above where Messiah is, seated at the right hand of Elohim. Mind the matters above, not those on the earth. For you have died and your life has been hidden with Messiah in Elohim. When Messiah, who is our life, is manifested, then you also shall be manifested with him in esteem. Therefore, put to death your members which are on earth, whoring, uncleanness, passions, evil desires, greed of gain, which is idolatry. Let me see that. And so what we have to do, before I read verse 6, what you have to do is we have to come to that spot where we spread the sheet. That's that H3381. Remember we talked about that in the service? You spread the sheet, and you come from that outside realm and get inside under the tent where we can be trained, taught, and learn together. And this is why we're here during Sukkot, to take advantage of that. So he said, because of this, the wrath of Elohim is coming upon the sons of disobedience. We don't want to have the wrath of Elohim come upon, and that's what's going to happen to the world. And so where would you rather be? Sukkot with God when he returns, or would you rather be out there entertaining with the world? Because you're going to be in one of those places. You're going to be eating from one of them trees. You're going to have a devotion to one of those trees. You're going to be worshiping one of those trees. If you worship in this tree, the end is death. There's no hope. But if you worship this tree, then this tree is the life-giving tree. This is the one who gives you the living water. And he says to you, neither do I condemn thee. This tree. And so what a wonderful part we have to look at in this particular text. So I want you to take some time to read Revelation 22 on your own. If you do that, that kind of ends this portion of it. And then the next time we'll go into the two women. That's going to be the title of it, the two women. It's going to be interesting. Thank you tonight for being attentive to the service. I appreciate you.
Pastor, when you was reading Colossians, what H what he gave? H3381?
Wagons and go and say, come down, bring them down to Mystery. Come down, because you're at.